This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Going over Danziger Bridge.
You are listening to KPFT Houston.
I haven't heard of any other confrontations where individuals were killed by armed security in New Orleans.
And is that being investigated? That shooting?
The other matter has not. The investigation has not been initiated at this time.
Last question, because we only have 15 seconds, and that is prisons. Where have the prisoners gone? A Human Rights Watch saying there are more than 500 prisoners who are unaccounted for from the last docket before the hurricane to the number count after. We have 10 seconds.
There are prisoners all over the state of Louisiana. Many of them were incarcerated for heinous crimes, and we hope to prosecute those people to the full extent of the law.
BBC News with Jonathan Wheatley. The European Union has officially opened membership talks with Turkey. The move came soon after the Turkish Foreign Minister Abdullah Gül flew into Luxembourg following an agreement on the EU's terms for accession negotiations. Turkey accepted the EU's terms after 30 hours of intensive talks between EU foreign ministers in Luxembourg. They've been battling to save the entry talks after Austria demanded that the process should include an option short of full membership for Turkey. The British Foreign Secretary, Jack Straw, hailed the opening of the talks.
We have just made history, and together we have had the first ministerial meeting on the opening of accession negotiations with Turkey. We were able to meet the deadline of the 3rd of October because I began speaking before midnight in the United Kingdom, and this is presidency time.
The Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan said his country had reached a key milestone in its 40-year goal of joining the European community. Following Turkey's agreement to the EU's terms, it emerged that the American Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, had spoken to the Turkish Prime Minister and Foreign Minister while Turkey was considering its position. A State Department spokesman said Dr. Rice wanted to reassure them of Washington's support for Turkish accession to the EU. Jonathan Beale reports.
These negotiations may be highly sensitive and ultimately out of America's control, but the US has already taken sides. As a member of NATO, Turkey has proved itself a key Muslim ally in America's war on terror. While some European countries see Islam as a potential obstacle to full membership, the US administration sees Turkey's dominant religion as a major reason as to why it should be included. Hence Condoleezza Rice's intervention at this critical time. The State Department said that a Turkey firmly anchored in Europe would be an even more reliable partner in the transatlantic family and a positive force in advancing peace, prosperity, and democracy.
The European Union has agreed to open membership talks with Croatia immediately. A declaration adopted by EU foreign ministers said that Croatia had now met the outstanding conditions for the start of accession negotiations and agreed to start discussions as soon as possible. Croatia was due to have begun its membership talks in March, but they were delayed because of its failure to cooperate fully with the International War Crimes Tribunal, which is trying to track down a key war crime suspect, the Croatian General Ante Gotovina. In an interview with the BBC, the chief war crimes prosecutor, Carla Del Ponte, said Croatia was now cooperating fully with the court.
Croatia is now full cooperating with us. That means that they are doing all what it can be done under the view of an investigation to locate Gotovina. So, of course, he's not now in The Hague, but what they are doing, they cannot do more than that.
You're listening to the news from the BBC. The German Chancellor Gerhard Schröder has hinted that he might step aside from the post. Up until now, Mr. Schröder has always insisted on his right to lead the next government. But speaking on German television, he said he wouldn't stand in the way of a stable government being formed. Mr. Schröder's Social Democratic Party has insisted it wants him to remain as Chancellor. The British International Development Secretary, Hilary Benn, has pledged another $350 million to help people in the world's poorest countries, which are mainly in Africa. Mr. Benn said the money would go to the World Bank to help finance projects such as the provision of clean water, maternal health and education. Mr. Benn made the announcement at a meeting of the African Partnership Forum, which was set up to monitor progress in the African Poverty Action Plan adopted at the G8 summit in July. He said the forum had to ensure aid money was properly spent.
The real job for the forum is be to the place to bring all of these commitments together, to track them, to monitor them. Where people are getting on with it, great. Where there are problems, people have to be called to account for that.
Republican and Democrat politicians in the United States have given an initial welcome to President Bush's latest nominee to the Supreme Court. The nominee, Harriet Myers, is a White House lawyer and long-term ally of the president, but has never served as a judge. The European Union has announced that it's imposing an arms embargo on Uzbekistan following the violent suppression of anti-government protests in the city of Adyjan in May. The EU has also decided to deny visas to top Uzbek officials, although it has yet to announce who exactly will be affected by the travel ban. BBC News.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Falinski.
And J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Deborah Bell.
And Glenn Holt.
We missed the opening billboard because Democracy Now! Is running a little late this evening, but on tonight's show, we actually have a full show tonight. David Elliott will be joining us very shortly about a few things that are going on in Washington, and actually we probably could spend the entire show talking to him about many of those items. Then we'll be talking to some of the representatives of the No Nonsense in November campaign, which is the anti-amendment to the Constitution where they want to write discrimination into it. Then, in the second hour, we're going to be talking to Yvonne and her friends about the Groove Girls event that's coming up this weekend. And also, Yvonne went to, I believe it was Chicago, for the Gay Journalists Association annual convention. Then, Deborah?
I have Bill Mayard from the Alley Theater talking about their Act Out series.
And then Joan Develin will be calling us in from our northern studio in Iowa and interviewing Aaron Coleman this evening. All that's coming up on Queer Voices this evening. And we will go right to David. And David, you sent me an email earlier about wondering whether you should actually be on tonight, but it's just amazing all the stuff that has gone on in the cronyism and the stupidity of the current Bush administration.
David who?
David Elliott.
That wasn't David on the phone?
No.
Oh, I guess David will be calling.
There was a little miscommunication there.
I guess there was.
We're all sitting here thinking David's on the phone.
That was a very good question
and
for
I was,
David.
Yes, yes. And I'm
which
sure he'll answer
answering
it.
Soon.
and we just let you go right ahead and ask it, too.
That's right.
Yes.
Okay,
well,
the phone is ringing now. Let me see if this is David.
Okay. And
I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on. And, in fact, there's a lot of stuff.
Very Texas-related, too, being that the new Supreme Court nominee is from Texas and delays newest indictment, and he being, of course, from Texas. So,
okay, well, David is with us now.
Okay,
yay,
David.
Well, before you start, and actually you sent us an email earlier today about wondering if we wanted you on. Well, with all the stuff going on, Tom DeLay got indicted the second time. Frisk has some problems with selling stock. The Karl Rove situation still isn't settled about whether he or one of his cronies divulged some information about a person who works for the CIA, which he shouldn't have. And then we've got a new nomination for the Supreme Court, a woman that talk about cronyism. And then there was an article in the New York Times this past weekend about bringing ICE to the area here for the hurricane, and some of these trucks delivering
jobs all
ICE
over the country.
Yes, just amazing. Talk about, you know, they talked about the Contract for America was supposed to simplify things. These were the people who knew business, and they were supposed to be able to manage it right. But the reality is that Bush is neither conservative nor compassionate. And, in fact, our country's bankrupt. And not only our country's bankrupt, but many people have died simply because of the stupidity of what's going on there. Hello, David.
I'm sorry, David. We're out of time.
Well, good evening to you, Jack. And hello, queer voices. I think I hear Deborah there.
Yes.
And JD.
And, you know, I apologize for joining you a little bit late. I had a last-minute computer crash, but that is taken care of.
Yay.
And, yes, there is a lot to talk about tonight. We have the late-breaking news out of Austin, the state capital, that Tom DeLay has been indicted again, this time on the charge of money laundering, to join last week's indictment, which was on the charge of conspiracy. We also have, possibly coming within the next week or two, Karl Rove and Chief of Staff to Vice President Cheney, now I'm forgetting his name, Scooter Libby, I believe it is.
Scooter.
They might be facing charges of conspiracy as well, conspiring to leak the name of Valerie Plume, who was a CIA operative. We also have Senator Frist's ethics issues, selling his stock in Hospital Corporation of America, which, by the way, is a big entity down in Houston. And, you know, normally the Frist accusations themselves would be a big story, but, you know, the times being what they are in Washington, D.C. these days, that's not even front page news right now. The big story, of course, is the nomination today of Supreme Court nominee Harriet Myers, so unknown that I was just watching Anderson Cooper on CNN, and he mispronounced her name. He called her Harriet Mears. I hope, by the way, that I'm pronouncing it correctly and that it's Anderson and not myself who's inaccurate here. And, you know, Bush is kind of taking it from all sides on this one this evening. I mean, liberals are calling it cronyism, but some conservatives are calling it a betrayal because they do not know what Harriet Myers' position is on choice and on civil rights for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community.
Well, David, I did hear that when she was with the Bar Association that she took an anti-choice stance against that organization's policy.
Well, what she did was she tried to get the American Bar Association to not take a position on choice. They had taken a pro-choice position, and she thought that the issue was very divisive and that the Bar Association didn't have any business taking a position on the issue. And, you know, I would say, well, you know, we wish they would take a position against the death penalty, but we haven't been able to get them to do that yet.
Well, but wasn't she, I believe I also heard that, you know, the Bar Association used to rate people before they were voted on to be a judge at the federal level. And she basically, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, she helped stop that, even though she was part of the Bar Association.
Well, they do. The American Bar Association still rates judicial nominees, but you're correct with half of your statement, Jack.
Well, that's pretty close.
With the aid and abettance of Harriet Myers, you know, who has served, of course, as chief counsel to the White House, the White House no longer takes the American Bar Association's rating system into account when they're nominating a judicial nominee. So the ABA still does it, but because of this administration, it doesn't have the oomph or the impact that it once did. Now, I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the reactions that are coming out of Washington, D.C. and other places tonight.
Okay, David, but before you get to that, do you have anything on her GLBT stances?
Absolutely nothing.
In fact, it was interesting. There was an email that came from MoveOn.org asking if anybody knew anything about her.
Well, and in fact, Jack, I got that email the exact same moment that I got an almost identical email from the progressive group People for the American Way. And the subject lines were identical. Each subject line read something like, what do we know about Harriet Myers? And the truth is, we know very, very little, except that she has been a close and loyal friend of George W. Bush specifically and the greater Bush family in general.
Well, and it seems like that's been his problem all along. It's loyalty over competence.
Well, it's, yeah, you know, and somebody, you know, made a comparison. A law professor at Ohio State University, a guy named Pete Shane, said, picking a friend for the Supreme Court seems like a flat-footed thing to do after the post-Katrina fallout over at FEMA.
Right.
You know, the federal emergency mismanagement agency.
But to be fair, she may very well be totally competent and capable, but as Kim Gandy, the president of the National Organization for Women, said, shouldn't we know more about someone who's going to serve on the Supreme Court?
Right, and in fact, you know, some of the senators, after realizing that they confirmed or voted for Brown, the gentleman who was the head of FEMA, that it sailed through so easily, that they now realize that they have a responsibility to check people out before they confirm them.
And her credentials are much more than being the head of a horse association.
Sure. And, you know, it's important to point out that questions are coming from all sides. I've got a quote that I want to read you here from a really conservative group called Public Advocate. And this quote comes from a guy named Eugene Delgadio, who's the president of this group. He says, quote, "The president's nomination of Myers is a betrayal of the conservative pro-family voters whose support put Bush in the White House in both the 2000 and 2004 elections and who were promised Supreme Court appointments in the mold of Thomas and Scalia. When there are so many proven judges in the mix, it is unacceptable this president has appointed a political crony with no conservative credentials." So, and then you have Ralph Mies, who's president over at People for the American Way, the liberal group. And full disclosure here, I used to work there, so I tend to like what they have to say. Ralph Mies says, quote, "With no past judicial experience for the senators to consider, the burden will be on Myers to be forthright with the Senate and the American people. She must outline her judicial philosophy and provide direct answers to questions about how and whether she will uphold fundamental rights, liberties, and legal protections on which Americans rely. There must be no rush to judgment." Now, one more quote I'd like to read you. This is from the conservative Third Branch Conference. Chairman of that conference, a guy named Manuel Miranda. Kind of an ironic last name there, since we're talking about civil rights. But he said, quote, "The reaction of many conservatives today will be that the president has made possibly the most unqualified choice since Abe Fortas, who had been the president's lawyer." That was he was LBJ's lawyer back in the 1960s. "The nomination," quote, "the nomination of a nominee with no judicial record is a significant failure for the advisors that the White House gathered around it. However, the president deserves the benefit of a doubt. The nominee deserves the benefit of hearings, and every nominee deserves an up or down vote." So that was a little bit mixed. So we're just going to have to wait and see. You know, it's...
Yeah, some people have said that she was the ultimate stealth candidate.
Oh, sure, because at least John Roberts, who was a stealth candidate in and of himself, he had a bit of a record that we could look at. With Harriet Myers, we don't have anything at all. We don't have anything at all. She's never been on the bench. She's never been, you know, a government attorney, for example, you know, worked in the Solicitor General's office, never clerked for a Supreme Court justice. We don't know. It is a blank slate. And, you know, since I got to work and heard about this nomination this morning, I was thinking about I was thinking about tonight's radio show, and I was thinking, what am I going to say? I have no idea what I'm going to say. And then it suddenly occurred to me that, you know, that's kind of the point, that this is a blank slate, that we don't know. We're going to have to watch this thing really, really carefully.
Well, and I hope the Democrats, you know, take a hard stand on this rather than just, you know, I mean, the fact that half of them voted for Roberts is not a good sign.
Sure, and, you know, it's going to be, I believe it'll be into November, or perhaps late October, before hearings begin. The very earliest that she would come before the full U.S. Senate for a vote would be December, and it might even, you know, stretch into next year. So we're going to have to wait and see. It's going to be, you know, an interesting winter, you know, with this nomination pending, and then it's certainly absolutely certain that Tom DeLay's trial will be pushed back into 2006. That trial is simply not going to happen this calendar year. So, my friends, we have a lot to look forward to.
Well, and it's really unfortunate that it's taken this long for all this stuff to sort of pile up. And the problem is that on a lot of these things, especially when it deals with the House or the Senate, is that the Republicans are in charge, so they're not going to slap the hands of their own people.
Right. And the Democrats can't just, you know, vote down everybody that gets put before them. And once again, the administration has been very clever in who they're proposing, because it makes it hard for anyone to really knock it down. There's nothing major to say. You know, in fact, I've heard from some female attorneys who know her from the State Bar of Texas and, you know, who liked her and who had voted for her and supported her. One, because she was female and they thought it was time there was a female bar president. And some of them liked it because she wasn't married.
Well, that's funny. That's kind of interesting. But yeah, she is a blank slate. There's no paper trail for us to chase. And it could very well be that with both her and John Roberts, we're not going to know what kind of jurists they're going to be until they have spent a year or two on the court. It could very well be that we will have a status quo court, that the court's not going to change a whole lot, or it could very well be that the votes might possibly exist to overturn Roe v. Wade, that the court indeed has taken a hard right turn. We will not know for, you know, maybe 9 months, maybe a year and 9 months. It's going to take a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and another thing that happened, which was sort of buried over the weekend, was that the Federal Accounting Office, the Accountability Office, basically said that Bush's buying of the media, Armstrong Williams, was not right. He shouldn't have done that. And, of course, we know he shouldn't have done it, but that basically was illegal. And they buried this on a Friday evening, where they love to bury those stories. But it's just like one thing after another. All those things they accused the Democrats of doing, they're doing. And I even think, like, Newt Gingrich is ashamed of what's going on right now.
That's saying something.
Yes.
Well, David, thank you again for being with us. Is there anything in particular that you want to leave us with?
Well, there is one thing that I'd like to leave you with, if you would allow me, Deborah. I would just like your listeners to know that for the first time in my organization's history, that organization being the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty, we are having our national conference in Austin.
Wow.
This year. It's going to be October 27th through 30th. And if your listeners oppose the death penalty and want to know how they could get involved in fighting the death penalty, they should go to our website at www.ncadp.org. Again, that's ncadp.org, and look up information on the conference, because we are really looking for volunteers to help us run it, and we'd love to have a good crowd from Houston drive over to Austin and meet up with us.
And thank you, David, and you're listening to Queer Voices.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Uganda enshrines homophobia with a constitutional marriage ban. Governor Vito Nater lives down to his marriage vow. And Le Ballet Trocadero, keeping the dance world on its toes for over 30 years. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 1st, 2005. This week, Uganda became the first country in the world to constitutionally ban same-gender marriage. With little fanfare, President Yoweri Museveni signed the amendment defining marriage as lawful only if entered into between a man and a woman, and making it specifically unlawful for same-sex couples to marry. No penalties were set for those who violate the new law. That's expected to come next year with a revision of the penal code. Opposition to the constitutional amendment was limited because Museveni's government is one of the most repressive anti-gay regimes on the African continent. Lawmakers critical of the president, who assumed power in a coup d'etat, focused most of their attention on another part of his so-called reform package, the repeal of presidential term limits that would enable Museveni to continue in office. Since a political confrontation with the government 2 years ago forced hundreds of gay and lesbian activists to flee to South Africa to seek asylum, there are few left in Uganda to protest.
California would have been the first U.S. state to legalize same-gender marriage without a court order. But Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger vetoed the bill passed by the Democrat-controlled legislature. Unlike most conservatives who oppose marriage equality being imposed by the judiciary, Schwarzenegger took the position that the matter should be decided by the courts. In his letter to the legislature, the governor said, "This bill simply adds confusion to a constitutional issue. If the ban of same-sex marriage is unconstitutional, this bill is not necessary. If the ban is constitutional, this bill is ineffective." Schwarzenegger also cited the passage of a ballot measure in 2000 that only marriage between a man and a woman is valid or recognized in California. However, there is still debate about whether that initiative applies only to gay and lesbian marriages performed outside the state, and a lawsuit challenging it is pending. Schwarzenegger went on to praise California's domestic partnerships, asserted his support for full protections under the law for gay and lesbian couples, and vowed to defend the rights they currently have from any rollback.
Connecticut's new civil unions law went into effect October 1st, but the fight for full marriage equality there is not over yet. Eight same-gender couples are still pursuing a suit, arguing that if the state is willing to grant the same legal rights and responsibilities as marriage under the civil unions law, there's no reason to maintain the separate categories. However, Love Makes a Family, the organization that spearheaded the effort to pass the civil unions law, believes their accomplishment is a significant step on the road to full marriage equality. State Attorney General Richard Blumenthal confirmed this week that Connecticut will recognize other states' civil unions and domestic partnerships, but not same-gender marriages from neighboring Massachusetts.
Marriage was also the main theme of this year's Pride March in Johannesburg, South Africa. Several thousand people took part in the parade, which began in front of the Constitutional Court buildings, where a lawsuit challenging the heterosexual-only marriage laws is currently under consideration. Participants took on the common cultural criticisms about homosexuality with placards carrying sayings like, "Same-sex marriage is African," and, "I am a very traditional woman. That's why I support same-sex marriage." One such traditional woman on a float sponsored by the Forum for the Empowerment of Women, or FEW, met with a very traditional hate crime along the route. The unnamed 18-year-old was slashed in the neck by a bottle apparently dropped from an apartment building. She was rushed to the hospital in critical condition. March organizers and hospital officials kept her identity secret for fear she would be attacked again, possibly even killed while still in the hospital. FEW spokeswoman Zanelli Maholi said, "These young women come from the townships, and they think they will be safe in the city." Although the country was the first in the world to enshrine equal rights regardless of sexual orientation in its constitution, Maholi added, "What has happened is an indication that we still have a long way to go in South Africa." The Constitutional Court's ruling on marriage rights is expected in a few months.
The popular Jamaican reggae star whose song Boom Boom Bye Bye threatens gay men with a gunshot in a head has been arrested as part of a group of men who brutally attacked six gays last year. Buju Banton pleaded not guilty and plans to fight the charges. Since it's difficult for Jamaican activists to speak out for themselves, their cause has been championed by the UK-based Outrage, which has coordinated boycotts of homophobic musicians around the world. Outrage's Brett Locke argues that it is imperative for Banton to receive the toughest possible sentence if found guilty. This trial is a test case on whether gay people can get justice in Jamaica, Locke said, adding, some Jamaicans fear that Mr. Banton's celebrity and the strongly homophobic attitudes that exist in Jamaica will deny justice to the victims of what was a horrific homophobic assault.
The Supreme Court of the United States officially has a new Chief Justice, as President George W. Bush's conservative nominee for that post, Judge John Roberts, was confirmed by a Senate vote of 78-22 and quickly sworn in. Roberts' nomination had been opposed by gay, lesbian, bi, and trans groups, as well as civil rights and reproductive choice advocates. Eleanor D. Acheson of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force called the confirmation beyond disappointing. It is outrageous. Other activists focused on organizing around the next Supreme Court nomination. Human Rights Campaign President Joe Solanas said, with a Chief Justice who's been given a stamp of approval by the extreme right wing, it's critical that the next justice preserve a fair and balanced court. The Bush administration is expected to present a nominee to replace moderate Sandra Day O'Connor very soon.
And finally, a University of New England student in the Australian state of New South Wales doesn't know just what his duties will be, but as the nation's first diversity officer for heterosexuals, Dave Allen will command a budget of $1,000. This does not please campus activists, since the money comes out of student fees, just like the diversity offices for minority students are funded. Craig Comrie, a spokesperson for gay issues at the National Union of Students, called the idea crazy. Comrie said, the reason why queer departments are set up is because those students are disadvantaged on campus. I think it's just a really unfair reaction to the fact that student unions support queer activism and women's activism on campuses. Allen told the Australian newspaper he did not give a rat's arse about homosexuals as long as they were not being given special treatment. It doesn't matter whether you're straight, gay, black, white, or brindle, but when it starts getting, oh, we need a space for us to hang out, it's crap. Just come down to the pub and have a few beers with us, he said.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 1st, 2005. Written this week by Lucia Chappell and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Rick Watts.
George don't know jack about Jesus, that carpenter from Palestine. W turns blood into oil, while JC turns water into wine. Jesus said, let him among you who is without sin cast the very first stone. Just ask Carla Faye Tucker how merciful. Looks like George knows a lot more about Pontius Pilate than the son of the one above. George don't know jack about Jesus, that carpenter from Palestine. W turns blood into oil, while JC turns water into wine. George says put food on your family, while Jesus said simply don't go killing each other. But George said, then why did your dad invent war? Lord knows that George dove right into this war. Now he's driving us off of the cliff. With no ifs, ands, or buts, it must drive Jesus nuts, with the pachyderms acting as if. George don't know jack about Jesus, that carpenter from Palestine. W turns blood into oil, while JC turns water into wine. We Texans have plenty to answer for, but we don't bully pulpit became the pulpit of a bully. When the truth comes to light, W's handlers will spin it. If J.C. had a grave, he would be spinning in it. 'Cause George don't know Jack about Jesus. That is Ray Lee from Palestine. W turns blood into oil while J.C. turns water. The trouble we could all go back home if George would just simply resign.
Take Dick with him,
but he keeps turning blood into oil, and he thinks somehow that makes him divine. Any fool can turn blood into oil, but Cindy, she hands doing just fine.
That is so new, it's not even on CD yet. That's by the Therapy Sisters. It's called, obviously, George Don't Know Jack About Jesus.
This is Queer Voices.
As he promised to do immediately after its passage on September 6th, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger this week vetoed AB 849, the Religious Freedom and Civil Marriage Protection Act, sponsored by openly gay Assemblymember Mark Leno of San Francisco. The landmark bill would have made the state's marriage laws gender neutral while specifically exempting religious organizations from having to perform or recognize marriages of gay or lesbian couples. Schwarzenegger did sign four other queer supportive bills. One bans discrimination based on sexual orientation, gender identity, or marital status by businesses that provide goods, services, or public accommodations. Another allows domestic partners of public employees who retired prior to January 1, 2005 to receive death benefits if the retiree dies before his or her partner. The third bill ensures that legally recognized domestic partners are treated the same as married spouses under California's property tax laws. And the fourth adds gender and gender identity to existing anti-discrimination provisions in state laws regulating insurance companies and health care service plans. However, while stumping for several initiatives he's sponsoring on the November 8th state ballot, Schwarzenegger told the San Diego Union-Tribune newspaper's editorial board that he believes marriage should be between a man and a woman, maintaining a dubious separate but equal status for queer couples. Reiterating his support for domestic partnerships while defending his veto of AB 849 to reporters in the Bay Area, he repeated his belief that only voters or the courts should decide if lesbian and gay couples can legally marry.
I have always been supportive of gay people and of their relationships, their partnerships. As a matter of fact, I've signed bills to support it, so I have no intentions of undoing anything that we have signed. And we will continue supporting gay people, and I think they have all right to be protected. But when it comes to the latest bill by Leno, I could not support that. I could not sign that bill because it is unconstitutional. And it is wrong to have the legislature go against the will of the people. The people have voted on that through Proposition 22, overwhelmingly that Proposition 1, and only the court can undo that.
San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom authorized marriages of gay and lesbian couples in his city last year, sparking a firestorm that led to their nullification by the state Supreme Court. However, that court is expected to eventually rule on the constitutionality of same-gender marriage in California. Reacting to the governor's veto, Newsom told reporters,
"This is not just about tens of thousands of gay and lesbian couples. It's about their sons, their daughters, their brothers, their aunts, their uncles, their godkids, and godbrothers and sisters. This is a disgrace. He has hurt the cause of civil rights. I think he's hurt his own credibility, and I think he should be ashamed of himself. This is not a surprise. It's just a typical act by a increasingly typical politician to placate a base, to say one thing and do another, to say one thing and do another. How's that for integrity and leadership in this day and age? Please. No wonder he's doing so badly in the polls. People are starting to see through this. And I just think it's pretty remarkable that Arnold Schwarzenegger gets to go down in the history books as the first sitting governor in the history of the United States of America to veto a civil rights bill that would have advanced the rights of gay and lesbian couples. Wow, there's a profile in courage.
Rallies and demonstrations were held up and down the state to protest Schwarzenegger's veto. One of them was in San Francisco's Castro district.
You can't veto us! You can't veto us! You can't veto us!
I remember the day that Arnold Schwarzenegger became the governor of this state.
I am the president of California!
And I watched on the television, and he looked straight into our eyes. And he said, I will be the governor for all California. And then he made a promise. He said, I will not forget you. Well, Governor, you have forgotten us. You have forgotten thousands and thousands of loving couples across the state. But I can guarantee we will not forget you, and we will not forget ourselves. And we will continue this struggle till we have full equality.
Yeah.
John Lewis and Stuart Gaffney, a couple for 18 years, were among about 200 people at the rally.
The governor can't veto our love, he can't veto our relationship, and he can't veto the lives of thousands and thousands of same-sex couples and their kids who simply want the same rights and protections for their family that everybody else has. And we really believe that Californians embrace one community where we're made up of all sorts of different types of people. And that's the truth of our families. There are lesbian and gay people in families all across the state, and we're really confident over time that when people get to know us as their friends, their neighbors, and their family members, they will clearly see the need for full equality that comes with marriage.
We need to send a message to the governor that vetoing equality is unacceptable. We were one signature away from true equality in California for all couples and families, and the governor needs to hear that that is not okay to stand in the way of our having the same rights that he and Maria enjoy right now.
Gay father James Martell chastised the governor and expressed concern about petitions now being circulated to put initiatives on the California ballot that would not only constitutionally ban same-gender marriage, but would also eliminate all the marriage-like rights currently available to registered domestic partners.
I'm here with all these other people to fight to not become a second-class citizen, or rather to stop being a second-class citizen, since that's what we've been all this time, and just to not let one single signature take away all of our civil rights. I really do think this is a civil rights movement very much akin to the one in the 60s, and I just want to be part of that. I have a son who's my biological son, and my partner has a daughter who's his biological daughter, and so I am, like somebody else, people are saying, a legal stranger to my own daughter. Mm-hmm. And there's some ballot initiatives right now to even take away domestic partner rights, so if one of us was in the hospital, we wouldn't be able to visit each other. It's terrifying. It's not just about rights, actually. It's about, you know, things like that.
17-year-old Marina Gatto spoke for the thousands of California children of lesbian and gay parents.
I'm here tonight to really send a message to the governor and let him know that he cannot veto equality. He cannot terminate the civil rights movement. You know, he has only temporarily slowed us down, but he refused to meet with me and listen to my story. The similarities that I share with his family especially are remarkable. Like him, one of my moms was not born in this country, but unlike him, she is not afforded the right to immigrate and live here and become a citizen because my parents cannot legally marry. You know, his daughter is exactly the same age as me. And the only difference between us is that I'm not given the same rights and protections that she has. I'm a legal stranger to one of my moms. While the governor is allowed to be here, you know, living his American dream, our American dream is just one of basic civil rights as a family. That's all we want, and that's all we're asking for. And no child deserves to be told that they and their family are second-class citizens.
Assemblymember Mark Leno of San Francisco, who sponsored the marriage equality legislation, had a few terse words for Governor Schwarzenegger.
The governor has really missed an historic opportunity to stand up for the full civil rights of all California's families and all of California's children. Unfortunately, he has decided to pander to his far-right political base, and I believe that he will live to regret this. We will prevail. Justice, liberty will prevail in spite of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That was California Assemblymember Mark Leno, and for This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, it's that time for election again, which always seems to be happening in Texas. We never seem to stop. It's almost time for election. And it's one thing after another. And actually, this time we thought it was going to be sort of a sleeper because, as far as I understand, that there is no opposition to Anise Parker, that the deadline has passed for somebody to file, that the mayor probably has just token opposition, and the mayor...
Exactly, token, because he is the man.
Yes, and I'm sure he has a big war chest to... ward that off if he did. Although there is some in the council election, and there's some that have been term limited, and in one of the races, in fact, position number two, Sue Lovell is running, and you can see the endorsement card or the endorsement card so far at the Houston Gay and Lesbian Political, actually it's Gay and Lesbian Bisexual and Transgender Political Caucus, and that's HGLBTPC.org. And they have their endorsement card there. Of course, KPFT itself cannot endorse anybody because we're a nonprofit 501c foundation. But we're just giving you some information about the endorsements. But besides that, there is on the ballot this time a constitutional amendment, which is amendment number two. Emily, why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, amendment number two has two different clauses. The first clause is pretty basic. It goes and defines marriage as between one man and one woman. But what we really have a problem with is the second clause. The second clause goes ahead and creates nothing similar or identical to marriage. The state can't create that. So that goes and bans civil unions, domestic partnerships, and other states like Ohio can go ahead and void out common law marriages for straight couples.
Yeah, the first part is redundant and unnecessary because it has already been passed in Texas that
right.
The definition of marriage, legal marriage, is one man, one woman.
Right.
That second clause is something entirely new and different for us, although this isn't really about marriage. This is about the ongoing onslaught of the politics of fear and of second-class citizenship.
Right, definitely.
And that to say that, well, to me, the worst thing is because it actually, it doesn't just, it's just not a law that's in the books. It's in the state constitution is what they're proposing.
Right. Gay marriage is already illegal in family law, but, you know, that can be changed by activist judges. So we're really, the right really just wants to put it in our Bill of Rights to just permanently make us second-class citizens. So we want people to definitely go out and vote against constitutional amendment number two. And we definitely want to get the point across that we're calling it constitutional amendment number two, not Prop 2 or Amendment 2, because it's really serious and people need to understand that this isn't just some silly little proposition. It's going into our constitution and it's going to stay there for a while. So people really need to make an effort to go out and vote on November 8th or during early voting so they can have their voices heard, because we can win with this with strength in numbers. So we just need to get the people out and registered to vote.
Well, it's interesting that Massachusetts is now just a year's worth of legalized gay lesbian marriage, and there's been no problems. And Connecticut has just allowed, they don't call it marriage, but they basically
civil
call
unions.
It civil unions.
Right.
And that one actually came from the legislature. That was not something that was demanded by the court. And, of course, Vermont's also had it, too, civil unions with no problem. And, you know, all this argument.
Well, in saying no problem, what we mean is that it has not jeopardized in any way people that are not same-sex from, in their commitments of marriage. It hasn't increased or decreased or changed in any way. If a man and a woman want to get married, they can get married, and there's no need to feel threatened.
Right.
If two women or two men can get married.
Right. In Massachusetts, it's pretty neat because it was going back into the legislature and they were going to pass it to put it on the ballot like in Texas, so everyone in Massachusetts would vote on the amendment. But they actually stopped it in the legislature with a campaign like ours. So it just goes to show you that if you go out there and call voters and go door-to-door talking to them, it can really make a difference.
Well, and that's the reality. The difference is in the grassroots type of campaign. And you've been in the the midst of all of that, haven't you?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, we go door-to-door every Saturday. So we just went out in the Heights and identified about 100 new supporters. So, and most of them, we find like 60%, 65% of the people we talk to are supporters. We tend to go tell them about the amendment because a lot of them don't even know there's an election.
Have you run into people that are in the community who don't support the right
or don't care?
I've heard people say, well, I don't want to get married, or I don't think gays should get married because blah 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 blah, whatever reason. And I keep saying, well, you don't have to.
Well, you know, there's even that
if you're gay or lesbian and you don't want to get married, that, you know, don't deny other people that want to that right.
Right. Some people just aren't connected to the community. They think, well, I don't want to get married, you know, so who cares? But then you look at the person next to them and go, well, do you want to get married? You know, what about all your friends? And, you know, maybe, who knows, your grandchildren are going to be gay and they're not going to be able to get married because you decided to go vote for this amendment. So people just really need to realize this affects a lot more than just themselves.
And we need to remind people again that it doesn't make any difference what your church does. No, there's no law that's going to make a church say you have to marry same-sex couples. There are many churches that already do holy unions.
Right.
Marriage is a legal contract.
There's also a lot, another interesting perspective is that a lot of Unitarian churches actually don't grant, they'll do a ceremony for either gay and lesbian or heterosexual couples, but they won't sign any marriage licenses. So that's another way that people of faith are kind of protesting the differences because they think everyone should be equal. So they're not even signing, they're forcing straight couples to go to the city halls and things like that to get their own licenses there. So they're really the separation between church and state, and we just want everyone to have equal rights.
Yeah, I mean, when I got married in my former life, I went to the courthouse and got married, and I was legally married. I never had any kind of church ceremony. So, you know, this concept that has gotten so mixed that I think that has been confusion for some people because they think it's against their religion or, you know, that it's somehow going to force their church to do something that they don't think their church should be doing.
Right. So it's really any church can do whatever they want. If some church wants to do holy unions,
some more than others,
they can, but they certainly don't have to. I mean, churches don't even have to do marriages for straight couples, so it really...
Now, I did see one article that said there has been, through the churches, most, you know, the mainstream churches, kind of a campaign against, to support banning the same-sex marriage, that they are...
They're against the amendment.
Right.
Right. There's one of the things we're working with in Houston.
No.
They're for the amendment.
They're for the amendment. We're against the amendment.
Right.
That's it has that reverse language in it.
Yeah,
it always gets confusing. But yeah, they're for the amendment based on those reasons. And so we need to, you know, remind people that when you go and vote, and by the way, if you are not registered to vote, the deadline is coming up. And if you have moved since last time you voted and you have not received a voter registration card at your new address, you need to do so by next week.
Well, actually, it needs to be done by this weekend. If there is a voter registrar, a deputy voter registrar, they can take it to the county by Monday.
Right.
But it's generally a month before the election. You still have time. You can go to the No Nonsense in November.com website, and there's a link there to register to vote.
People can vote online, right?
I mean, register to vote.
Well, you can download the application
online. That's what I mean,
online.
Register.
Yes, you can.
Is it download?
Yeah, you still have to send it in.
Okay.
But you can download it and print it off. But another and easier way to do it.
And maybe more fun.
Yeah, a really, really fun way to do it would be we're having a statewide bar outreach night, which is going to be on October 8th. That's this Saturday. And the time varies between bars, but, you know, when you get there, you can register to vote at JR's, Keys West, Decades, Chances. There's about 10 bars in Houston you can go to, and you can look for the upcoming ads in TXT and local magazines like that. We're trying to get everyone out to just go to a local bar, and there's going to be registrars there. So on your way into the bar, you can just register to vote there. And you can also donate a couple dollars to the campaign, because we always need money, especially to call the voters we need to call to remind them to vote. So, and also another night, if you can't make it Saturday, Monday after work or after school, you can stop by Guava Lamp. HERA, the local Houston Equal Rights Alliance, is putting on a fundraiser for No Nonsense November. So we're trying to raise funds, sell our yard signs, t-shirts, and bumper stickers, and let everyone know about the campaign and how they can get involved in early voting, because the early vote starts on October 24th.
So what time is that on Monday?
That's at 6:30.
Starts at 6:30 and goes to
8:30.
So you can go over there and do that before you turn on your radio to hear Queer Voices.
Right. Definitely.
Or actually, you can always listen to our program on the internet at www.kpft.org. So you don't necessarily have to miss the program just to take part in something like that.
Or we can play Queer Voices at the fundraiser.
Good idea.
Sure, that would be exciting.
I like the way you think.
Yeah, we don't need to miss out on anything.
So what are things, you know, how are you feeling about the campaign? I mean, it's statewide and the effort that's going into it?
I feel really good about it. We're getting every week at least a couple hundred supporters here in Houston. So it's really, it's progressing every week. It's really steady. We're hoping to have, we just had a really great house party on September 30th statewide. So we're still trying to raise funds. We're trying to be able to contact, raise enough money to contact all the voters in Houston. But a way to do that really inexpensively is to go through the NoNonsenseNovember.com website, and you can call voters from there to remind voters who frequent amendment elections to remind them to vote.
Right, that's really neat. You can get yourself set up so that you don't have to go to somebody's office. You can actually start working for the campaign at home if you have a computer.
Right.
And it's all set up, and it's just really neat. They, as you sign up, they give you like a sort of a web page type of thing.
Right.
And you just call people to remind them, and the script is all there. It's really easy to do. It's not intimidating. And we're sort of moving into the, you know, the this present century with this type of capability.
Right, our Meso Texas campaign, we're actually asking everyone across the nation to call in different gay and lesbian groups. We've asked them, just have their members, you just call 5 minutes a night or 5 minutes every other day, and you're really making a difference, and you don't even have to go anywhere. So when you come home from work, you can just log on or go to the NoNonsenseNovember.com website, and there's a logo that you click on. It's Meso Texas, and it brings you to the onlinephonemaking.com website, where you just register, and then it pulls up the script, the names, the phone numbers, everything right in front of you, and you just click the different questions and submit it, and you've just called in their voter to remind them to vote.
If somebody wants to volunteer otherwise, how do they do that?
They can go to the NoNonsenseInNovember.com website. We have an interactive calendar on there, so it's always updated with new events. We staff a lot of events, to like the Heights Festival we just went to on Sunday. We signed up about 100 new people there and sold T-shirts, so we're looking for volunteers to staff events. Those are on the website. And also, every Tuesday and Thursday at the GLBT Community Center, which is 3400 Montrose Boulevard, suite number 207, we do phone making to recruit volunteers. Basically, any day or any hour you want to volunteer, we're up there. So our phone number at the community center is 713-522-4372. So you can just give us a call and let us know. We'll be there.
Well, great, Emily. Thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you.
Election time is just around the corner, and early voting is even sooner. And I believe that starts on the 24th, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And it goes for almost 2 weeks, not quite 2 weeks. But we need you to be registered to vote and to know what the issues are all about, and then go vote.
And we need you to volunteer, and we need you to be active in the campaign in some way and on Election Day.
Right. And on Election Day, volunteers are always needed to work outside the polls, and that's actually a lot of fun. I usually do that. In fact, my polling place is just like next door here at, from KPFT. You're listening to KPFT Houston at 90.1 and 89.5 in Galveston. You're listening to Queer Voices.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky, Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, and Glenn Holt.
Hey! You're happy. up and down the number, baby. It's all out of freak show. Lock out of diving under, honey. I won't let you cover blow. You're such a sweet boy, my fascination. Lie in the shade and do it. World domination, your revelation keeps satisfied and do it.
Some of you may recognize that voice. That's Andy Bell, one half of the group Eraser. This time he's out with a solo album called Electric Blue. The song is called Caught in a Spin, and it's a very good CD. It includes a duet with Jake Spears of the Scissor Sisters, another very popular group.
This is Queer Voices.
In our second hour tonight, besides the interview we're going to do right now, we're going to be talking to people from the Alley Theater. And then Aaron Coleman is going to be joining us later to talk about some of the things that he's up to. But right now, there's an event coming up this weekend for, it's a Groove Girls event. Why don't you all introduce yourself?
What the heck is a Groove Girl?
A Groove Girl is a fun-loving individual who goes to a fundraiser and likes to dance and has good taste in music and women and friends, and all proceeds benefit Pride Houston.
But before we get to that, why don't you all introduce yourselves?
Yvonne Feast with Pride Houston and with Groove Girls.
Lisa Tran with Groove Girls and Pride Houston.
Okay, so this event is, what's it all about?
Basically, this one is an 80s-themed party. We've had several parties in the past, and this one coming up this Friday night is 80s, and we're going to have all kinds of really good music.
On the main floor, we're featuring Back to the Future. We used to play at Union. On the patio, we're going to have B-Sides and Mr. Pink Eyes, who currently plays Cherry Bomb at Eve.
So there's going to be, like, all kinds of different music and two different areas, and you can go back and forth. As well as Nancy Ford is going to be hosting a live women's auction. We're going to be auctioning off 10 to 11 lesbians and at least 4 or 5 straight girls to the crowd.
So why do you feel that you need to do this?
Because since we got involved with Pride a few years ago, there were tons of men's events in the calendar and all kinds of parties and great things like that. And frankly, the barn in Chances gets old. You know, we wanted something different, something fun, and something that was Pride-related. We wanted to have a big women's party in June, like Austin and all the other cities do. And so we got a crew of our friends together and decided, you know, let's do this a few times a year and put all the money towards Pride, and we save it in the events area of that so that we can have future women's events and parties and get-togethers.
What's the location for this?
1415 California.
Okay. And the 80s, gosh, what was around in the 80s? See, for me, the 80s would have been...
Were you around in the 80s?
Yes, I was coming out in the 80s because I came out as a mature woman. But it would be like women's music.
I wasn't sure. I thought maybe you skipped it.
Skipped the 80s?
Yes.
Oh, well. Some of us wish that we had.
Well, actually, maybe we should be skipping now.
Yeah, that's true. And so you've been having good turnouts for the events that you've done so far?
Yes, and we've gotten lots of positive feedback, and we're really excited, especially about this girl auction, because it's the first time we've tried something like that. I know in the past guys used to auction each other off for dates and stuff like that in the bars back in the day, but I don't think anything's been done like this for women. So I'm really interested to see how the turnout's going to be, and we're going to have a very diverse crowd.
How diverse?
Wide age range, anywhere from, it's 18 and up, so we'll have 18 and up and 50s, 60s, whatever.
For some of us who actually do remember that.
and quite a few straight and bisexual and everyone and their mom, friends. And Group Girls is actually made up of a wide range of people. It's not just a handful of lesbians.
Mm-hmm. Not just a handful of. If only I had a handful of lesbians.
I can make that happen. Come Friday.
I usually go in and it's like all these people that, okay, I could be their mother.
You should let us auction you off.
No one would bid on me, and then I'd just be really, you know, have my feelings hurt and everything.
Oh, and with each woman comes a gift certificate to a local restaurant.
Oh, well, then I might stand a chance. you can bid me.
So how do you program to a wide variety of ages? That's got to be a little bit...
It's not easy. Sometimes some people want to hear this particular type of music and others, but I think we do a pretty good job, considering.
Lisa is stumped. She has no words. Well, you know what? You need to send the info to me so that I can put it on the Feminist Online Network.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if it's been on Carol Wyatt's social notes list.
She's
okay.
Been great to us.
Okay. Well, you just seem forget about me. And
oh, it was
then it doesn't go out to my list, which is pretty good sized.
You have to let your list know, especially if you're going to be in the auction.
Yeah. I still have trepidation about this now.
Yvonne, you're also involved in the National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association, and you recently went to the national convention, didn't you?
Yes, that was really interesting because I left Wednesday and came back Monday night, so I missed all of Rita but heard about it every 5 seconds because yes. I was surrounded by journalists, and I was also the only person from Houston that was able to make it. There was one reporter from Galveston that was there as well, and we were the only two.
So how'd that convention go? Was it and who's involved in this? Is it just people who just journalists, print?
Everybody. You've got journalists, PR, artists, all kinds of people across the board. And there were a lot more broadcast journalists there this year. And everything's transitioning from, I mean, it's not just print media and TV now. It's web, TV, you know. Everyone's got their own shows. What's it called? Like, everyone has podcasts and everything else.
Podcasts and
it's interesting to see how media's
going. And so what's kind of the purpose of there being a specific organization that's for GLBT journalists?
Because not every city yet has GLBT media in their area, or certain topics aren't covered, especially like Midwest and stuff like that. Everything needs to be reported on fairly. There's queer terminology that really should be used when reporting on a story, so that people, you know, don't get swayed a certain way or fully understand the situation.
Are there quite a few people that work like for mainstream publications, but
yes, many. Most are, actually. Most that were there were mainstream media.
Well, name names.
Oh, everybody was there. I mean, anyone from a small town paper to, like, Fox News of all people, which they always get ripped on, the gay people that work at Fox.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And
yeah.
Everybody. It was hard because our friends from the Chronicle that were supposed to go, they all got forced to stay and report on the coverage.
Right.
It was 24/7.
It was, too.
I guess Anderson Cooper wasn't there either.
No, we saw him, his footage in Beaumont or wherever.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's almost like one of the biggest stories that could have possibly happened. And you weren't around for it. But,
it
of course,
really
it wasn't.
Weird.
Yeah. Not that you necessarily would have been someone who would have been involved in reporting on a hurricane. But, you know, I could see where there could be something that would happen that would be like a big story. And then you're like, well, I was at the journalist.
Well, the strangest thing was, you know, who are you? Who do you work for? What's your name? Where are you from? Kind of thing. And I'd be like, Yvonne. And I'd say Houston. And they'd look at me and they wouldn't know whether to, like,
you know, feel sorry for me or say something nice or positive or tell me, oh, it went from a 5 to a 4. You know, it was really a little awkward, but overall, they ended up having a last-minute workshop panel on Katrina and all the reporters that were actually there on hand and talked to people, and they were having a big panel on that, but I was personally Katrina'd out, so I didn't attend that one.
Interesting.
Being in the middle of it and everything, witnessing it firsthand versus everyone else.
Yeah. And so what did you get out of it? Was this your first time to attend?
It was my first convention. Last year I couldn't go because they had it the same weekend as our Pride, which, hello,
Send
Pride
them. Houston.
Pride comes first. So I finally got to go.
Well, a lot of other big cities also have Pride that weekend.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And they actually had a lower turnout, I'm sure, at the last convention.
Right, if they don't have Pride in their city, they have there's probably a city nearby that's doing Pride.
For sure.
And they could always come to Houston.
Right. So how does somebody get involved in the local chapter of the National Lesbian Gay Journal Association?
All they have to do is visit the website, NLGJA.org. And they can click on Houston or Texas, and it lists the chapters. There's a Dallas chapter, and there's a Houston chapter. And the Houston chapter, our president, Oliver Dyke, is on there, so you can click on his
great name.
Right? Lucky guy. And so just click on it, and you can send him an email and join our group. And we meet every so often in various locations and do different things. We're trying to do some more workshops and get things back together, but all the officers have been really slammed with everything that's been going on recently.
Mm-hmm. And so from this convention, was there something significant that you got from it?
It was great. I learned a lot about people, and I attended some panels and workshops that taught me lots of valuable skills. And networking alone, I mean, wow, I got to meet some of my mentors and people like from the Times and here and there. It was really a great experience. I'm looking forward to the one next year in Miami.
Well, we need to give credit where credit is due, and Yvonne is one of the people that works very hard to put out the book that comes out during Pride. I guess it's called the Pride book?
Pride 06.
Pride 06 will be coming up. She's an excellent photographer. And is already working on the 06 issue. So when you see that, you'll say, hey, I heard her on the radio. I knew her when.
So the Group Girls event is?
This Friday night, 14:15.
Doors open at 10 p.m.
And that's 14:15 California?
Yes, right above the Pride office.
Okay, and you expect a big crowd?
Definitely. And it's going to be the best music we've ever had. And from our cover charge.
Our cover charge?
Well, actually, we prefer that you don't.
Oh.
There is a cover charge. That's all we can really say.
Oh, all proceeds benefit Pride Houston.
Yeah, system. And go to the website?
Yes, groovegirls.com.
And then you can find out more about the event and the practicalities of fees and things.
Yvonne and Lisa, thank you for coming this evening.
Thank you so much for having us.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
The company was founded in 1974 as the playful experiment of a group of ballet enthusiasts. Le Ballet Trocadero de Monte Carlo was performing in off-off-Broadway lofts at late-late shows. They've danced through a lot of history since then, reflecting the changing attitudes towards gay sensibilities as well as changing styles in the arts. This Way Out correspondent John Frame spent some time with the company's artistic director, Tori Dobrin, to learn more about their work and play when the Trocs made their triumphant return to Brisbane, Queensland, Australia.
Tori Dobrin, welcome back to Brisbane for the first time in 3 years.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show again.
You were quite happy to talk with us that time 3 years ago as well, because the Ballet Trocadero certainly has a good, perhaps an ample sufficiency of gay men involved.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it doesn't matter anyway. I mean, whether I'm queer or not, and I am, you know, it's good to talk to people.
What would the percentage be, do you think, in professional dance?
You know, I'm actually not really sure, but it's hard to tell. I mean, I know that some companies have lots of non-gay men in them, and lots of companies have lots of gay men in them. So I think it really depends on how the director is feeling about himself as a gay man or himself as a heterosexual man, who he wants to work with. But I think the comfort level is obviously the dance world is obviously very comfortable with gay people, no question about it. I would venture a guess that it's probably 60% gay and 40% straight. I think that part of the appeal of Trocadero is that the guys are having really a lot of fun, and they are comfortable to be who they are.
Yeah.
And when you're comfortable to be who you are, hopefully you won't have a lot of fear.
When I saw the Trocs that time 3 years ago, I was amused that Ari and myself, Ari also for Queer Radio, were sitting beside a man who'd obviously been taken along to the Trocs by his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst he was having a delightful time, like smiling and laughing and eye sparkling right through, he stared at his shoes, slunk down in his seat, and just had his hands in his pockets for the whole time. Now, it seemed like he was determined not to enjoy it because he should have been able to have a great time. Do you find the Trocs really does have broad appeal? Would he be one of the few people who'd refuse to enjoy it?
Well, I try not to worry about people who have narrow, constricted little minds. And it's not, you know, they need to deal with that in all aspects of their life. And until they do, that's their business. We tend to attract a fairly open crowd. You know, you usually have to buy a ticket to come see the show. And if you have this little narrow constricted mind, you wouldn't buy a ticket to see the show. So we don't really come into contact with people like that. But there was one really interesting story a few years ago when we were in this tiny little town in Italy, and obviously they didn't market the performance so well. And there, I was sitting in the balcony, actually, you know, checking getting ready for the performance, and you know, checking out who was in the audience, because it's interesting to see who would come in a little tiny Italian town. And there was this little man, and you could see he was a little old man, and you could see he was so excited to see the ballerinas, you know, and you know, all looking forward to it. And he had this anticipation on his face, and you could just tell. And the curtain goes up, and there are our male ballerinas, and the disappointment that just went over his entire body. Yeah, you know, it was almost sad. It almost broke my heart. And but he continued to sit there, and about halfway into the show, he got totally into it and was laughing and had a good time. So for me, that was really heartwarming.
Yeah.
You know, that he went through all those profound emotions that we all have of, you know, disappointment and trying to deal with that, and maybe a little anger, and then, you know, happiness and enjoying himself. So it was interesting.
Now, a comment was made about the Russian National Ballet that one of their big attractions is they have these superb backdrops that they carry with them. So what's the main attraction with the Trocs, do you think?
Someone really said from the Russian National Ballet that their backdrops was their...
Yeah.
Well, in ballet, it should always be about the performer on stage, always. Just like when you go see the opera, it should always be about the singer. And so we try to continue on. And I think that's really important. When I go see Australian ballet, I want to see great performances. You know, that's why you go, for the performer. So Trocadero definitely is a performer-based dance company. All of our ballerinas are encouraged to develop their own personalities, so that you're not seeing cookie cutter personalities. We want them to draw out of their personalities the comedic side of them. And so that, I think, is one of the appeals of Trocadero, because you see pretty confident, secure, knowing performers give detailed and nuanced performances during the evening. And you see a variety of them. You know, we just don't have one or two very good performers. We have a whole company of excellent performers.
And people who like being groupies for the Trocs, do they find that the Trocs actually do mingle with townsfolk and the people they're visiting?
Yeah, everyone in Trocadero is actually pretty nice. I mean, it's really... the organization is just like a little dysfunctional little family, you know. We have our ups and downs and getting along and things like that. But it's nice when you're on the road to, you know, see people outside of the company environment, and that usually is our fans or people who come. So, you know, it's well appreciated, and, you know, it's nice to talk to someone who's enthusiastic about what you do. You know, there's nothing worse than doing something and no one cares and no one wants to bother talking to you. That's very discouraging. So, no, it's nice. It's definitely nice.
So, in these last 3 years, then, has there been any one particular event that's happened that you've thought was just fabulous, like the best show, the best audience reaction?
Well, a couple of things happened in the past few years that have been very exciting for the Trocadero. I think But on sort of a grim note, I mean, the mere fact that the conditions in the United States are so intense right now, especially for dance companies and arts organizations, that the mere fact that we are continuing to flourish under these difficult times financially for the art world in the United States, because we have this president over there who's doesn't think about the society too much or its well-being. So a lot of dance companies are really, really struggling, and it really is very discouraging. Yet we actually are doing fine. So that, to me, is impressive for us. So that's kind of exciting on that level. We've done some incredible tours. Last year we went all around Asia, which was really wonderful. We performed in Bangkok, which was just a wonderful, wonderful audience, and Singapore and Hong Kong and the same. And then we appeared in Beijing. And those were all debut performances for us, and that was really exciting to break into new markets. And then about a month later, we actually performed for a week at the Bolshoi Theater in Moscow. Now, and to great critical acclaim, and it was a very interesting time for us. But if you really think about it, 30 years ago, this show was appearing at midnight shows in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. You know, a real counterculture drag act based with its roots out of Stonewall. In 30 years has gone to the Bolshoi Theater in Moscow. That is a long distance to travel. And I think it is an indication that a society has changed so much for gay sensibility, cultural organizations. I think that's pretty impressive. And for a dancer to appear at the Bolshoi Theater is totally thrilling. You know, I mean, not that many dancers in the history of dance have appeared at the Bolshoi. Yep. So it was really fabulous. And we also performed in some really fun cities like Barcelona. We did a tour to Hawaii. You know, we had some nice tour. We performed in Paris for a week to great critical acclaim. And so it was nice. It's definitely been a good couple of years.
That was Tori Dobrin, artistic director of Le Ballet Trocadero de Monte Carlo, in conversation with John Frame in Brisbane. To find out when the Trocs will be dancing at a venue near you, check out their website at www.trocadero.org. That's TROCKADERO.org. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Rick Watts, Sherry Lunn, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, Cindy Friedman, and John Frame contributed program material. Thanks also to Brian Goebel and KCBS Radio in San Francisco. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Don't forget you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are underwritten by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep this program on the air, to sign up for our monthly emailed This Way Out updates, and or to get our weekly program information messages, email tworadio@aol.com. And to be sure you don't miss a week of This Way Out, you can subscribe to audio CDs of our program. For all the details, please do visit thiswayout.org, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on Boise Community Radio, Boise, Idaho, CKDU, Halifax, Nova Scotia, KZSC, Santa Cruz, California, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station, to which we know you'll stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
And welcome to the second hour, well, the going into the final stretch, actually, of Queer Voices. And J.D. and I are in the studio with Phil Mayard of the Alley Theater. And it's theater, Dolly. And he's going to talk to us about a special series they have called Act Out. So that means we're all going to show up and we're going to all know. What is ACT
Out? We're
all
going to show up and be very gay together.
Oh, I like that.
No, it's ACT Out is our gay patron program, which we started last year. We're going into our second year, and basically what it is a one night out of each run of our Hubbard Stage Productions, which is our formerly known as the Large Stage. We do a pre-show party of starting about 5:30 till about 7:15. This season we're doing all of our events up in the Alley Theater for Alley Theater Production Center, which is just adjacent to the theater, overlooking downtown. And we do a pre-show party, which is attended by 150 to 200 gay, lesbian type people, and a lot of
and their friends,
and lots of cool straight people have started coming because, frankly, we throw a pretty good party.
Will the cast be there?
We will have, for this particular event, this is the event this week is in honor of Be My Baby, which is the world premiere of Be My Baby by Ken Ludwig. And we will have some of the cast members in attendance. Elizabeth Bunch is coming, who a lot of people remember as Anel in Steel Magnolias. And Ty Mayberry is coming. The very handsome Ty Mayberry will be around, who a lot of people will probably remember as the lead in Hamlet a couple of seasons ago. They're both coming.
And, of course, the headliners, I guess you would call them, are Hal Holbrook and Dixie Carter.
Absolutely.
Both excellent actors and well-known. Of course, Dixie Carter, certainly known as Julia Sugarbaker. I'm sure probably she tries to live that down somewhat. She's also a wonderful singer.
Absolutely.
And then Hal Holbrook, icon beyond belief in theater. Mark Twain Tonight and so many wonderful performances. Kind of interesting how they got together, isn't it?
It's very interesting. And what I think is most interesting, especially for people in Houston, is that this is actually only the second time they've appeared together in a show. So not only are people in the city have the opportunity to see this brand new comedy by the playwright who wrote Lend Me a Tenor and last season's Leading Ladies, but they also get a chance to see Dixie Carter and Hal Holbrook together, which is very, very rare.
Now, in keeping with the theme of the title of the play, Be My Baby, this party is also, you're doing something special.
Right. We're doing a baby shower. We are doing a baby shower, and which is in...
Now, that's got to be a new one.
That's a new one for a lot, most gay people, I would say. But we're doing a baby shower in, it's benefiting Casa de Esperanza, which is a safe place for children in crisis due to the abuse, neglect, or the effects of the HIV virus. Yeah. So we're asking everybody to bring a child's item, a toy, diapers, formula, something of that effect, and it's going to all go to a very wonderful place.
That is a wonderful place. I have a friend that used to work there, and when she first started there, she said, well, she'd been a volunteer, and then she says, okay, I'll take the job, but I'm not taking home any dead burn baby. Yeah. Well, guess what? A darling little six-month-old came into her life, and that six-month-old just started her first day of school, so...
Well, it's a wonderful, wonderful place.
Yeah,
we're really glad to be able to help them out
as
well.
Yeah, it's a lot of kids that really didn't have anywhere else to be and are able to be taken care of and then also to find loving homes. And but the series, I think this is a new play, Be My Baby. Is
Be My Baby is the world premiere. It's the first time ever.
So
we're just getting it off the ground this week.
It's the birthing.
It is the birthing of Be My Baby. Absolutely.
And you want to give us a little synopsis of the storyline?
Well, it's basically, from what I understand, I've seen little bits and pieces of it in rehearsal, but it's actually just had its first performance this past weekend. And we had another show opening this weekend, Hapgood, so everyone was pretty wrapped up in that, and I haven't really seen that much.
But I saw it, and it was excellent.
Well, but as far as Be My Baby, from what I understand, it's two people that sort of get thrown into a situation where they have to take a baby. They don't particularly like each other, the man and the woman. That would be Dixie and Hal. And they get thrown into a situation where they have to take a baby cross-country. And so it's about their journey across the country, which, of course, leads to... a lot of interesting situations, and I won't tell you how it all turns out.
The characters are not a couple.
Well, not initially. Not initially. That's all I can really say.
That's all we can divulge.
It's a very nice, sweet comedy. I'll just tell you. I can just tell you that much. And I think everyone's going to really like it. If the turnouts are anything like we had last year for Leading Ladies, this is going to be a really. It's going to be a really big hit.
Is the humor pretty sharp?
It's very nice humor. Everyone can come. It's definitely a family kind of comedy.
And so the Mixer starts at 5:30 on Thursday, October 6th.
This Thursday.
And you go in the lobby and they say, go that way?
Exactly. You're going to come in. If you want to, you can get your ticket before the party, or you can pick it up on the way into the show after the party. But you can go to the lobby and they'll tell you where to go. It's up to the 14th floor. And there's going to be complimentary hors d'oeuvres from our wonderful season sponsor, Hunan Downtown, and beverages from Budweiser. So there's that. We're going to be able to you're gonna meet cast members. We've got DJ Mike Bell, who spins at 6 Degrees and Mercury Room down on Main Street. He's great. He also happens to work for the Alley, which is a nice mm-hmm. little perk for us. And basically the party is free with the purchase of a ticket to the show.
And then the performance starts at 7:30.
Exactly.
And people can buy there's a whole series, and you can get a special mm-hmm. rate for buying the whole series.
Like season ticket.
Absolutely.
Yeah, season.
You do save
quite a bit
by subscribing.
So you can do that online?
You can do everything online at www.alletheater.org.
And spell theater?
It is with the R-E, A-L-L-E-T-H-E-A-T-R-E. However, if you do type it wrong, it will bring you to the right side.
Oh, they're so clever.
Mm-hmm.
And the telephone number?
Is 713-228-8421.
And then if you want to get like a whole group of friends together
Absolutely.
And say, let's do this every... time
every play
the, every play then there's a special number to call for that.
Absolutely. You can call 228-9341 and it's extension 346, but if you just call any number at the Alley and ask for groups, they'll direct you the right place.
They've got it together, huh?
Yeah, we have a lot of groups that come to act
out.
So
the date again,
it's this Thursday at 5:30 at the Alley Theater Production Center.
The name of the play,
and the play is Be My Baby by Ken Ludwig, the world premiere.
Website
and
www.alletheater.org.
Okay.
And then let's just go over briefly the other plays that are going to be coming
great.
Up in the series.
Sure.
Because this goes all the way
into next summer.
May. So
right after the new year, we have Culture Clash in America. Culture Clash came for two performances, or not a little, just for a very short run this past year, and they were an amazing hit, and they had packed houses, so we decided to put them on as a full part of our season. They're right after the new year in January. Definitely a very edgy, cool combo. We're really excited about that.
Just in time for mine and Jack's birthdays.
Oh, perfect. Well, then we'll expect you there. After that, we have Born Yesterday. We just announced a couple of weeks ago that Marissa Tomei is going to be doing the lead in Born Yesterday, and that's in March. Shortly after that, we have The Miser, which is we're bringing in from Theater. I'm not really sure how to say this.
Something
Theater Le Jeune Lune. They just won the Tony Award for Outstanding Regional Theater, an award that the Alley won a few years ago.
Wow.
But they're coming in to do The Miser, which is an old Molière play, which is going to be really fun. And then finally, we're finishing up the season with an Agatha Christie play called Witness for the Prosecution. That's also a first for the Alley. Usually, we just do Agatha Christie during the summer for our summer chills, but we decided this is her biggest play, and they're always so popular with our audiences that we decided to add that as a season, part of the season.
Well, it sounds like a very exciting season and a very special series. Thank you very much for coming on to about Act Out at the Alley. It's a season's worth of Tony Award-winning theater.
I flew down to your webpage. Every word was blue. The man you had your ties to. And there's for you, uh-huh. And I recognize that command. Why did we stay together? We could have made such a good.
without you, there's nothing left to see. Soon I stood for nothing, and nothing stood for me. I should have just kept my head. Why did we stay together? Such a good one-night stand. When it hurt me just to stand up, it was you that put the pain there in my stance. Boy, yeah, baby, when I stood there hurting, who was it but you that put the stain there in my pants? Crossed the threshold, you entertained some doubts. You entertained my best friend whenever I was out. I caught you trading toys. Why did we try to make music when we could have just made some noise? I guess I tried to best you. I guess you got there first. We neither got the best of this, but me, I got the worst. I've respectively saved and damned. Why did we stay together? Is my quicksand. Why did we stay together? We could have made such a good one night stand.
And that's a brand new track called One Night Stand by one of my favorite artists named Brady Earnhardt.
This is Queer Voices. And now, somewhere from the wilds of the cornfields of Iowa, here is Joan Devlin.
Yes, hello, and I'm jealous because you guys sound like you got a lot going on there. All we have here in October is the corn maze, so...
Are you the queen of the corn festival, Joan?
Hi, the haunted corn maze. Last year it was shaped like Willie Nelson. This year it's shaped like the Quaker Oats guy.
I see. Well, Joan, we have our friend Aaron Coleman in the studio.
Joan, darling, how are you?
And
he
can introduce the entourage.
Well, David with Dos Osos Productions, my partner and collaborator, is here. And our new artist, Raphael, is
here.
All
right. Well, tell us a little bit about Raphael to get us started off.
David, you take it.
Raphael is a new singer that we got from the back of surprises. And he came to me through Miss Lupita, that is doing gigs around town, and she sent him to me, you know, asking me to produce some material for him. And I'm very proud to introduce this very young, new artist and talent.
On the scene, he has an amazing voice. Raphael.
Hi, how's it going?
Hi, Raphael. Well, I want to hear what you do, because I know Aaron has a good... Aaron, well, first of all, let's start. Aaron and David are extraordinarily talented.
They are, yes.
More.
Yeah. And unlike some people with talent, they appreciate other people who are talented, and they're always kind of willing to give other people a hand up and to collaborate, and they do amazing things. They've always done amazing things.
Well, Houston is a mecca for that. There's so many talented people here.
I know, but you seem to have a, you know, good eye for them. And Raphael, how has it been working with Aaron and David?
It's definitely been an experience. Oh, there's a story behind that.
Yes, indeed.
I've worked with other studios, and it's just been like no other. You know, most places are about money and time limitations. And with him, I mean, he's my friend. So, I mean, it's just been great. It's more like a friendship. It's like going to my second home and just hanging out with your friends and, you know, doing what you love, which is making music.
And I'm making him work hard.
He works hard. Yeah, there's some sweat and blood.
It's right on the walls.
Do we have any samples?
Yeah.
We have actually my first single, which is called Music Bumpin' Ooh-Op. And we did the track about maybe a month and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
A month ago. And I think it's a dance tune. It's dancey, it's poppy, it's R&B. I think it's great.
Well, let's hear it.
Well, let's hear it.
Go, Glenn. Hi, Joan. I didn't say hi.
I've been watching you so carefully. I have caught you staring back at me. One day that was just me and you. Let's whisper what we could possibly do.
Dreams going all night.
Can you feel the energy at night? Can grow. Baby, come show me how we can do. The music's bumping on and on.
Baby,
go party to the break of dawn.
Players,
come throw your hands up in the air.
Ladies,
swing them hips, make them feel a stare. The music's bumping on and on.
Baby,
go party to the break of dawn.
Players,
come throw your hands up in the air.
Ladies,
swing them hips, make them feel a stare.
Joan.
Yes, I was grooving here, and I'm hearing it over a cell phone, speakerphone, so you know if it sounds good over a cell phone. Sounds really good, y'all.
Were you jamming, Joan?
Yes. Oh, so Aaron.
Yes.
Other than finding new talent, which, you know, is an extraordinary thing that you do, what have you and David been doing? What other collaborations have you been working on? Because Colossal Free has been out now for, what, about 6 months, eight months?
Yeah, still hawking that bad boy. And also I was asked by Yvonne Feast to write an article on some worthy artist in Houston, and I found John Palmer, who is at www.johnpalmerart.com. He is an incredible abstract artist, and I'm going to write a feature for Pride 06 magazine on him. And other than that, we've been working with...
We have lots of work still in the process, and with different artists like Rain, that is in Chicago, and he does like electronica music, and also with Lehasim, that is also in Chicago thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And we are doing music through the internet. He's sending me tracks, and I'm sending him back tracks too of music, and we are putting together stuff. So there is quite a lot of artists, like Theophore that I'm working with.
And then we're doing our separate stuff. David and I are doing stuff together, so we're busy.
And we are forgetting about Eric Alan,
that is, yes.
He came at the same time that Rafael to work with us, and he does more like Latin music, kind of rock Latin. And we're going to bring him by.
So and all you have to do is check out our website. It's the number 2OSOS.com, and you can hear the tracks on there.
Is Rafael going to be performing somewhere?
When he gets his album pretty much done, he'll be performing.
As soon as I get my album complete, then I will start shaking trees and doing what I need to do. But right now, I'm just in the writing process and growing as a vocalist and as an artist, you know, writing material every day and working like a dog in the studio.
That's right. Really?
So Aaron and Dave and David and Rafael, talk to me a little bit about how collaborating with different types of artists and doing newer things, how you guys kind of feed off each other and inspire each other. Because Aaron and David especially, you seem like you have a really diversified group going on there, and I know that has to inspire y'all in some way.
Every time, I meet a new artist, I never expected to work with so many people, actually. You know, I always been doing music in Spain with some few artists, you know, a pair of bands, you know, usually rock and roll, and I came here to America and suddenly I have all these people that want to do hip hop. it kind of messes up my little neurons. But you know, it's inspiring because it forces you to get out of your own box and try to do justice to the artist, because here nobody has big money. It's all about inspiration and doing great music. And I hope we're getting to that point, that we're doing great music and nice melodies. And every artist gets their way, you know, as much as they can with me, you know.
And he's such
musically speaking.
he's such a perfectionist. It's like, I think the artist profit a great deal from being produced in the proper manner. You want your work to sing, you want it to get out there, but you also want it to be have good quality, and David stresses that point.
Yeah, and you know, we've all heard it, and there's nothing worse than you get, and JD can probably speak to this too, you get a CD or something or a tape from an artist and it's great stuff, but it's so poorly produced.
That's right.
Kind of like, oh, I don't know if we can use that.
And I don't think that anything gets let out of Dos Osos unless it's gotten the thumbs up all the way around. David is a taskmaster, and he's got an incredible ear. So we listen to his ear.
Now, that sounds funny. I've heard of listening with your ear, but never listening to an ear. Well, Aaron, I know you're also very involved in the community, so you want to talk a little bit about some of the things that you've been doing over at the Gay and Lesbian Community Center?
Yeah, I think we've been doing featured at the center for 4 months running during the summer, and we kind of went on hiatus because I think people are busy. They've got other stuff going on, so we haven't got the crowd that we were hoping to, but we're thinking about bringing it back in December and doing another featured at the center, and we're hoping everybody will come out.
Explain exactly what those events are about, because I think one thing is that people don't really understand what's going to happen or that how they can participate.
It's featuring local artists doing their thing, like performance art, whether it's poetry or music, singing. We've had dancers, we've had modern dance, we had a comedy troupe once, and they were smashing. We've had Lily Roddy and Phyllis Fry, known as Transitions. They performed, and
we must say, in case people don't realize it, Phyllis Fry and Lily Roddy both are identified as transgendered people. So, what a funny name to use! And I think they sing and play the guitar.
They sing and play the guitar, rock and roll, and easy listening music, and they're very good.
For me, Lily Roddy kicks that guitar out. I like when she comes home and she plays that guitar. And she plays mean guitar.
Mean guitar, and who knew?
Right.
Who knew? That's what I was...
horoscopes and music.
I was doing the drawings for her on the Artisman magazine for the little horoscope thing, and she had playing mean guitar, and I was like...
So our perceptions of people can change.
Right. Exactly. Right. You never know what people have up their sleeves.
And usually you think that artists are going to be more open-minded, and myself, I was faulty on that. They say, I thought she was an astrologer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I say, she is doing all this amazing stuff with the guitar. I say, okay, I step my boundaries.
So it's a good venue for someone who might be a newly up-and-coming person or would like to try out some material and among friends.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Well, no, you know, I don't work with anybody that cannot be my friend.
Well, you and George Bush, apparently.
So the next event will probably be announced in Outsmart magazine, so look for it.
And what else do you have going on? I think you mentioned that you were going to be...
I'm doing this article on John Palmer, and I think I'm going to try to swing an interview with him for Outsmart magazine.
But yeah, Rafaelis already have done like two songs more in the studio, middle tempo pop song and a slow ballad. That they are to come in the next two months or something like that.
Yeah.
And we have like two songs more for Erika Land. People to check it out on the webpage. Everybody's interested in Latin music. And other artists that are to come that I'm working with them already. But it's a long process. We don't do a song every month. We need more time.
But I know Rafael's got some shouts out that he wants to probably say.
Holla!
Holla, your people.
I want to say hi to all of my friends and to Sam and to my mom and to my dogs.
Wait a minute, Betty Boo. Are you on the bed? This is Mama. If you're going to talk to your dogs, I'm going to talk to mine. I turn on the radio so she'll hear Mama's voice.
Are you still there, Joan?
Yes, I'm still there.
All right.
Enjoying this. I've probably known you now for 4 or 5 years, and you have had such an amazing journey.
It has been a journey, and I'm sorry that you are distant and far away from me, but you're always in my heart, and I'm always thinking about you, and we miss you so much.
Yeah, I miss Texas, too. Like I said, nothing here but the corn maze.
Well, we have about a minute left, Joan.
Okay, Aaron, so wrap it up for us. Once again, give us the website and tell people how they can get a hold of Philosophy Free as well as Raphael's single.
It can be garnered from the site at www.2osos.com. That's the number 2osos.com. And you can listen to Raphael's music there. You can listen to my cut. David has a couple of cuts. Erika Lahn. We have a bevy of artists. And just come on, check us out.
It's all about culture.
I hope you all enjoyed the song. I think we have an up-and-coming artist here.
He's very...
Also darn cute. And that never hurt. Thank you, David.
Well, we miss you. We love you, Joan. And shouts out to everybody.
Thank you.
We love you.
Yeah, thank you for hosting from out there in the cornfields, Joan.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
Okay.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
And actually, Jack is here as well. And
so
it's time
to thank everyone.
Yes, we'd like to thank all of our guests tonight, which includes David Elliott calling us in from Washington to keep us up to date on all the stuff that's going on up there, which there are a lot of stuff going on. We'd also like to thank the No Nonsense campaign and what's going on there, reminding you that this is the last week to get registered to vote. And you can do so by going to nononsenseinnovember.com website, and it will get you the right link on getting registered to vote.
been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 7 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, and Jack Valensky, with remote correspondents Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. For more information about guests, events, and organizations mentioned in the show, visit queervoices.org. Some of the music you heard is listed or available on J.D. Doyle's website, queermusicheritage.org. Be sure to listen every Saturday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Stands for New Orleans and Houston. We are a group of Houstonian area musicians and their friends reaching out to our brothers and sisters from the hurricane-stricken region of the Gulf Coast. We offer support to those musicians and their families who have been forced to leave their homes and their livelihoods and relocate to Houston. If you are or know a musician from that devastated area, please contact us. We can help. Our website is www.noah.leans.com, or we can be reached by phone at 713-805-9118. NOAA is an arm of the Musician Benevolent Association, a 501c3 nonprofit.
Montgomery County Youth Services is offering a mentoring program serving children of prisoners. Children served in this program are between the ages of 4 and 14 and must live in the Montgomery County. Matches are carefully made based on common interests, personality, and geographic area. Mentors help the child focus on improving academic and social skills and developing a positive self-image while increasing exposure to cultural opportunities. Mentors who can commit to the program for at least 1 year are also needed. For guidelines and more information on this program, please contact Kim Birdwell at 281-292-6471. That's 281-292-6471. This is KPFT Houston.
Pacifica Radio, listener-sponsored, commercial-free, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.